Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's McAllister, Book 1, The Eagle's Legacy. By William W. Johnstone with J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by Stephen Carpenter, Christopher Sheeran, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Joe Brack, Mort Shelby, Thomas Keegan, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aislefort, Eric Messner, Michael John Casey, Casey Platt, Christopher Graybill, Richard Rowan, Bradley Smith, Lynette Savard, Tim Pabone, Kimberly Gilbert, Tim Carlin, Nick DePinto, Patrick Bussin, Yasmin Toison, Gary Tell, Scott McCormick, Evan Casey, Drew Kopis, Thomas Penny, Johann Detweiler, James Konachek, Colleen Delaney, James Lewis, and Rose Elizabeth Supan. Scotland, Dunoon in Argyllshire. The White Horse Pub in Dunoon had an island bar, Jacobean-style ceiling, beautiful stained-glass windows, and etched mirrors. Despite its elegant decor and clientele of nobles, it was primarily a place for drinking, and most who came behaved with decorum, enjoying the ambiance and convivial conversation with friends. But some, like Alexander, Donald, and Roderick Summerald, sons of Angus Summerald, Lord High Sheriff of Argyllshire, regarded their station in life not one of seemliness, but one of privilege. They drank too much, considered all others to be beneath them, and behaved with little restraint. Duff Tavish McAllister, a tall man with golden hair, wide shoulders, and muscular arms, was sitting on a stool at the opposite end of the bar from the Summerlds. That wasn't by accident. There was a long-standing feud between the McAllister and Summerald clans, going back to the time of Robert the Bruce. And although the killing of each other had stopped 100 years ago, their dislike of each other continued. Ian McGregor, the owner of the tavern, was wiping glasses behind the bar, and he stepped over to speak to Duff.
Duff, my lad, I was in the cemetery the other day, and I saw marked on the tombstone of one of the graves, "Here lies Geoffrey Summerald, an honest man." So this I'll be asking you. Think ye now that there may be two bodies lying in the same coffin, Geoffrey and an honest man?
Duff was wearing a kilt, and he slapped his bare knee in glee. McGregor's daughter, Skye, a buxom lass with long red hair, flashing blue eyes, and a friendly smile, had been filling 3 mugs with ale as her father told the joke. Duff and Skye were soon to be married, and their bands were already posted on the church door. Most of the customers of the White Horse Pub appreciated Skye's easy humor and friendly ways, and they treated her with respect due a woman. But some, like the sheriff's 3 sons, treated her with ill-concealed contempt.
Bar girl! More ale!
You know her name, Donald Summerald, and it isn't bar girl.
Tis a bar girl she is, and her services were needed.
I'll not be but a moment, Mr. Summerled. I've other customers to tend now.
You're carrying 3 mugs? There but 3 of us. Serve us first. You can get more ale for them.
I'll not be but a moment, sir.
Donald was carrying a club, and now he banged it on the bar, startling Skye.
Dropping him! What a clumsy trollop you be! If you had brought the owl here, as I asked, this no wouldn't have happened!
I told you, sir. I had other customers.
Your other customers can wait! Be you daft as well as clumsy? Do you know who I am?
Donald Summerald, that is my fiancée you're talking to. And if you speak harshly to her again, I'll pull your tongue out of your mouth and hand it to you.
Oh, well, me seeing who's handing who their tongue.
I'm at your service.
Donald charged Duff, not with his fist, but with his raised club. Duff grabbed the same bar stool he'd been sitting on.
You'll be paying for that, Duff McAllister!
Alexander, Donald's older brother, charged Duff now. Duff tossed the bar stool aside and put up his fist to meet Alexander's charge.
Damn your eyes!
The third of the Summerald brothers, Roderick, joined the fray. Duff backed up against the bar, thus preventing him from getting behind him. He sent a blow into Roderick's nose and felt it break. As Roderick fell back, Alexander picked himself up off the floor and charged back into the fight. Duff was waiting for an opening, which came after Alexander tried another roundhouse ride. Duff managed to pull back from it, and as Alexander completed his swing, it left the opening Duff was looking for. Duff pulled the trigger on a straight right that drove his fist into Alexander's Adam's apple. Alexander put both hands to his throat, and when he did so, Duff followed with a hard right to the chin. Alexander dropped.
Hear, hear, let's give a hurrah for Duff McAllister!
Hurrah! No, gentlemen, I believe you called for more ale.
Donald and Roderick responded to Ian with scowls and helped their oldest brother to his feet. Then the three men left. Duff went back to the bar and finished off his drink.
Sky, would you step outside with me for a moment?
Duff took her hand in his and walked outside with her.
Only 4 more weeks until we're wed. I can hardly wait.
No need to wait. We can go on to Glasgow and be married on the morrow.
Duff McAllister, my mother has waited my whole life to give me a fine church wedding now, and you would deny her that.
Don't worry, Sky. There's no way in the world I would start my married life by getting on the bad side of me mother-in-law. If you want to wait, then I'll wait with you.
What do you mean you will wait with me? And what else would you be doing, Duff McAllister? Would you be finding a willing young lass to wait with you?
Oh, I don't know such a willing lass. Do you? For truly it would be an interesting experiment.
Oh, you!
Sky hit Duff on the shoulder.
I'm sorry. You just made me so mad talking about a willing lass.
You are the only willing lass I want.
I should hope so.
Duff bent down to kiss her waiting lips. Duff Tavish McAllister was the 5th generation to live on and work 3 crowns. The property was first bestowed by King Charles II upon Sir Falcon McAllister, Earl of Argyleshire and Laird of 3 Crowns. Falcon was Duff's great-great-great-great-grandfather. The title passed on to Falcon's eldest son, Hugh, but died when Hugh migrated to America. The land stayed in the family, passing down to Braden McAllister, who was Duff's great-great-great-grandfather. The land passed through succeeding generations so that it now belonged to Duff. 3 Crowns got its name from 3 crenellated hills that, with imagination, resembled crowns. The family cemetery was atop the middle crown, where Sir Falcon McAllister and all succeeding generations, down to and including Duff's father, mother, and only brother, lay buried. Duff was the last McAllister remaining in Scotland. Duff raised Highland cattle on 3 Crowns. He liked Highland cattle, not only because they were a traditional Scottish breed, but also because they required very little in the way of shelter, actually enjoying conditions in which many other breeds would perish. Cold weather and snow had little effect on them, and they seemed to be able to eat anything, getting fat on what other cattle would pass by. Duff had read of the great cattle ranches in the American West and how they required many cowboys to ride atop the huge herds across vast areas. But because the Highland cattle were so easy to handle, and he had only 300 acres, Duff was able to manage his farm all alone. He did have something in common with the cowboys of the American West, though. He oversaw his herd from the back of a horse, and this morning, he saddled his horse. Then, as the sun was rising, he took a ride around his entire 300 acres, looking over his cattle. It was a brisk morning, and both he and his horse blew clouds of vapor into the cool air. The cattle were grazing contentedly, totally unresponsive to the horse and human who had come into their midst. As Duff reached the southern end of his property, he saw a break in the fence. 10 of his cattle had gone through the break and were now cropping the weeds that grew on the other side of the Dunoon Road. Duff slapped his legs against the side of his horse, then rode at a quicker pace until he reached the break in the fence.
Who told you cows you could be over here?
Duff guided his horse through the break and across the road. He began rounding the cattle up and pushing them back across the road toward the break in the fence. It wasn't a particularly hard thing to do. Highland cattle were known not only for their hardiness, but also for their intelligence and docile ways. He had just gotten the last cow pushed back through the break when Rab Malcolm rode up. Malcolm was one of Sheriff Summerald's deputies.
Your cows are trespassing on county property. You could be fined for that, you know.
My cows were keeping the weeds down along the side of the county road. I should charge the county a fee for that.
Making light of the offense does not alter anything. I saw your cows on the road. That is a violation, and you could be cited.
Cite me, or ride away, Rab Malcolm. I'll not be listening to your prattle.
With your wild carrying-ons last night, 'tis an enemy you have made of the sheriff. And in this county, 'tis not a smart thing to make the sheriff your enemy.
Sure, and the Summeralds and the McAllisters have been enemies for 200 years and more. I doubt that there is anything I could have done last night that would make it more so.
You will see. The sheriff was very angry. I've never seen him more angry.
Be gone with you, Malcolm. 'Tis enough of your mouth I've listened to today.
See that your fence is mended, Duff McAllister. I will not have commerce along this road disturbed by the likes of your cattle.
Duff was back at the White Horse pub that evening.
I'll not be playing the pipes at my own wedding. For sure now, and how would that look? My bride would come marching in on the arms of her father, finely dressed in her bridal gown, looking beautiful. But there is no groom standing at the chancel waiting for her. Where is the groom, people will say. Poor girl, has the groom deserted her at the altar? But nay, the groom is standing in the transept, playing the pipes.
No, I didn't mean play the pipes at the wedding. But afterward, at the reception, you could play the pipes. You play them so beautifully, it would be a shame if you didn't play them.
A fine thing, Ian. Your daughter wants me to work on my wedding day.
Duff McAllister, for you, playing the pipes isn't work. It's an act of love, and you know it. Sure, and there's no man alive can make the pipes sing a more beautiful song than you.
So the two of you are doubling up on me, are you?
And if we need another, there's my mother, for she would want to hear you play as well. Say you will, Duff, please.
I'll play the pipes, for how can I turn you down?
Best you be careful, Duff, my boy, lest you let the lass know how much power she has over you.
What, Ian? Do you think she doesn't already know?
Duff put down his empty beer mug and then stood.
Best I get home. Skye, would you be stepping outside with me?
No need for that, Duff McAllister. the only reason you want me to step outside is so I'll kiss you goodnight, and I can do that right here.
In front of everyone.
Aye, me love. In front of God, me father, and everyone else.
Mwah! With that, Skye kissed her. Before stopping by the White Horse pub, Duff had picked up his mail. Not wanting to read it in the pub, he waited until he got home. Now, settled in a comfortable chair near a bright lantern, he looked through the mail.
Dear Cousin Duff, my name is Andrew McAllister, and yes, we are cousins, though I'm certain that you have never heard of me. I have heard of you only because I hired someone to research my family's past, with particular emphasis on any of my family that might remain in Scotland. That brought me to you. You and I share a great-great-great-great-grandfather, one Falcon McAllister from the Highlands of Scotland. You might be interested to know that I have a brother named after him, and I am pleased to say Falcon has done the name proud. My twin sister Rosanna and I are theatrical players, and on the 5th of April we shall be appearing at Campbell's Music Saloon on Argyle Street in Glasgow. It would please us mightily if you could attend the performance as our guest. Sincerely, Andrew McAllister.
I thank you for the invitation, Duff. But thinking I am, you should go by yourself, for they are your kinsmen.
And soon to be yours as well. For when we are married, my kinsmen are your kinsmen.
Aye, but we aren't married yet. And so they aren't my kinsmen now. And they didn't invite me, they invited you.
That's because they know nothing about you. I will introduce you, and then they will know you.
I think it would be better if I didn't go. Besides, after we're married, I will no longer work for my father, so I feel I should give him all the time I can.
Then if you won't go, I won't as well.
Duff Tavish McAllister, how dare you do that to me? Don't saddle me with the responsibility of you not going.
I just meant...
I know what you meant, Duff. You must go to the play. I would be very upset with you if you did not. Go, then come back and tell me all about it.
I'll do better than that. If you won't go to meet my kinsmen, then I shall bring them here to meet you.
Aye, now that I would like. I have read of them in the newspaper. They are quite famous in America, you know.
Are they?
Aye. It'll be a grand thing to meet them, I'm thinking.
Campbell's Music Saloon, Argyle Street, Glasgow, April 5th. Duff McAllister was a reserve captain in 42nd Foot, 3rd Battalion of the Royal Highland Regiments of Scots. As such, when he arrived at the theater, he was wearing the kilt of the Black Watch, complete with a skean-do, or ceremonial knife, tucked into the right kilt stocking, with only the pommel visible. He was also wearing the Victoria Cross, Great Britain's highest award for bravery. He picked up his tickets at the reserve booth and then was taken back to the green room. A man who was in his early 50s and carried himself with great dignity walked up to him.
Cousin Duff! How good of you to come.
It was good of you to invite me. You would be Cousin Andrew.
I am. Sister, come and meet our Scottish kin.
A beautiful woman in full show dress walked up to him next.
Cousin Duff, this is Rosanna.
Rosanna stuck out her hand, and Duff bowed his head slightly, then raised her hand to his lips for a kiss.
Oh my, how gallant. Andrew, do pay attention to our young cousin. Perhaps you will learn a thing or two.
Timothy?
Yes, my lord.
Please take Mr. McAllister to the orchestra, row 5, center seat. I may have just sown the seeds of my own disaster. That is the best seat in the house. If I stink up the stage with a poor performance, there will be no hiding it from you. The play we are presenting tonight is called The Golden Fetter by Watts Phillips. I do hope you enjoy it.
Oh, I am certain that I will greatly enjoy the performance.
Duff did indeed enjoy the show. The curtain came down to thunderous applause. Duff remained seated as the others in the audience began to exit the theater. He wasn't entirely sure of what was expected of him now. Was his only obligation to come and see the show? Or should he go back to the green room and wait? Or would that be too presumptuous on his part? Not until he was the only person remaining in the auditorium did he stand and start to leave. That was when Timothy appeared from the same side door Duff had gone through when he visited the green room.
Captain McAllister!
Aye?
Mr. McAllister's compliments, sir, and he asked if you'd join him in his dressing room.
Timothy led Duff through the green room and down a long hall to one of two doors, each which had a star just above the name. The sign on one door read, Miss McAllister. The sign on the other door read, Mr. McAllister.
Mr. McAllister! It's Timothy, sir! I've Captain McAllister with me.
Andrew stood just on the other side, his face white and shining with some sort of cleansing lotion.
Thank you, Timothy. Come in, Duff, come in. I shall be but a few minutes longer. Then perhaps you would honor Rosanna and me by allowing us to take you out to dinner.
No.
No?
I was your guest for the wonderful play. No, I insist that you and Rosanna be my guests for dinner.
We would be delighted.
Duff watched in fascination as Andrew sat down at his dressing table and, using a towel, wiped his face clean of the cleansing lotion. Gone also were the dark lines that had been around his eyes and the dark outline of his lips.
You must wonder what kind of man would put makeup on his face.
Nay, I...
I know, my own brothers tease me about it. But one must outline the eyes and the mouth when on stage, for next to the voice, those are the most important instruments in an actor's profession.
Andrew, are you decent?
Why, sister, I am one of the most decent people I know.
That had better be more than a joke, because I am coming in.
Rosanna's makeup and costume had been removed, but she was still, Duff saw, a very attractive woman. She smiled at Duff.
Did Andrew tell you we want you to be our dinner guest tonight?
I told him, but he refused.
What?
It turns out that he wants us to be his guests.
Oh, I hope you accepted.
Of course I did.
Duff took his two cousins out to dinner at the King's Arms restaurant.
It is Scot you are, so Scot ye shall eat.
We defer to you, cousin.
Duff ordered a rich Scotch broth to start the meal, then a hearty pot-roasted chicken with potatoes as the main course, and he finished it up with cloody dumplings covered in a rich custard sauce. During the meal, Andrew explained how they were related.
Our father, that is, mine and Rosanna's, was Jamie Ian McAllister III. He was captured by the Shawnee Indians in 1817 on his 7th birthday and raised among them so that he was more Indian than white. He learned the warrior's way, and when he was only 9, he shot a deer with a bow and arrow he had made himself. And if that wasn't enough, he fought off 2 wolves for the carcass. That earned him the name Man Who Is Not Afraid.
Father was at the Alamo. He was the last courier Colonel Travis sent out before the final battle.
There is a statue of him in the town of McAllister, Colorado. The statue was made by the noted sculptor Frederick Remington.
My, with a history like that, a statue in a town of the same name, your father must have been quite a successful man. I'm sure you're very proud of him.
We are. He was one of the true giants of the American West, and founder of the city that bears his name.
His father was Jamie Ian II. He was one of the early settlers and a successful farmer in Ohio. My great-grandfather was Jamie Ian I, and he was truly a giant. He made the trek west with Lewis and Clark, and he became a mountain man, living and trapping on his own for many years before returning to civilization. My great-great-grandfather, Seamus McAllister, was a captain during our Revolutionary War. He was with Washington at Valley Forge, crossed the Delaware with him, and was at his side at the final battle of Yorktown. In doing family research, I came across a letter written to him by George Washington in which he praises Seamus for his military skills and courage. My great-great-great-grandfather, Hugh McAllister, was a captain in the service of Governor Joseph Dudley of Massachusetts during the Queen Anne War. Hugh McAllister was the first of our family to emigrate from Scotland and was the brother of Braden McAllister, your great-great-great-grandfather. Both were sons of Falcon McAllister. And that, my dear cousin, is where our family lines cross.
You said in the letter that you have a brother named Falcon.
Indeed we do. and I hope you will forgive the familial pride, but Falcon is one of the most storied people in our American West. Have you heard of General Custer?
Of course, I've read much of him.
Falcon was with Custer on his last scout.
But how can that be? I thought all who were with Custer were killed.
Custer divided his forces into three elements. All who were with him were killed, that is true. But most of the other two elements survived.
I must confess that when Uncle Hugh took the McAllister name to America, it sounds as if he and all who followed have done the name proud.
Do you know much of our mutual ancestor, Falcon?
Aye. On February 7th, 1676, Fingal Somerled and his clan set out to destroy the McAllisters and steal all their cattle. But our mutual grandfather, Sir Falcon McAllister, Earl of Argyleshire, learned of the threat and set a trap for the Somerlds. When Somerled and his men entered Glenfruin, he encountered a large force of men led by Falcon McAllister. Somerled tried to withdraw, but he found his exit blocked by a strong force that Falcon had put into position for just that purpose. The Somerlds were trapped, with McAllisters in front and at the rear, and the walls of the glen on either side. They were completely routed, many were killed, and Fingal barely managed to escape with his life. That was the start of a feud between our families that continues to this day.
You mean you're still killing each other?
Oh, no. Thankfully, we put that aside. But we do still have our moments.
Do you know the history of any of your other ancestors?
Oh, yes. We've kept an oral history as part of our lives, so much so that it feels I actually know ancestors whom I never met. Duncan McAllister is an interesting ancestor, but I'm afraid my great-great-grandfather Duncan fought against your great-great-grandfather Seamus in your Revolutionary War. He was with General Cornwallis at Yorktown. As a result, he was part of an ignoble surrender. I'm proud to say, however, that he fared much better at Waterloo, where Napoleon was defeated. Duncan was a sharpshooter with the 95th Rifles, part of the Duke of Wellington's army. My grandfather, Allaire McAllister, was a brigadier with Sir Harry Smith in India when Ranjit Singh was defeated. My father was a captain with General Simpson during the Crimean War at the Battle of Sevastopol.
And you?
Ah, yes, my uniform. I am a captain in the reserves.
You may be in the reserves now, but I know for a fact that you are not wearing the uniform of the Black Watch merely for show. You took part in the Battle of Tel El Kebir in Egypt. That is where you received the Victoria Cross you are wearing.
You have done your homework, haven't you, Andrew?
I wanted to find out as much as I could about our Scottish cousin. And while admittedly the bloodlines that connect us have grown thin with succeeding generations, I believe that the spark of kinship can quite easily be fanned into a flame of genuine friendship.
For anyone else, the blood might be too thin at this point to claim kinship, but not for the McAllisters. Sure, and we are as kin as if you were my brother, and a more beautiful and talented sister I could scarcely envision.
After they enjoyed their dinner, Duff took them to the White Horse Pub. Ian was behind the counter as usual, and he smiled broadly as he saw Duff arrive with Andrew and Rosanna.
Ian, my friend, may I introduce you to my kith and kin from New York?
Ian, who had been drying glasses, put the towel over his shoulder and extended his hand toward Andrew.
"'Tis a pleasure to meet the American cousins of me dear friend and soon-to-be son-in-law, Duff McAllister.'
Ian looked toward Rosanna.
"'And what a beautiful woman you be! 'Tis no wonder you're so successful in the theater.'
"'Are all Scots so gallant?'
"'Tis our way.
Where is Skye? I must meet my cousin's fiancée.
She is there waiting on yon table.
Oh, my, what a beautiful young woman she is. Duff, I can see why you are so smitten with her.
As can I. What I can't see is why she should be smitten with you.
Ian put mugs of ale on the bar in front of each of them. Andrew reached into his pocket for money, but Ian held up his hand.
This is on the hoose. Surely I can furnish a beer to my own cousins now, can't I?
Cousins? Did I not go far enough in my genealogy research?
Hey, we aren't cousins yet, but when my Skye marries Duff, 'tis cousins-in-law we shall be.
I suppose that is true, isn't it?
Skye returned to the bar then and was introduced to Andrew and Rosanna.
'Tis most pleased I am to meet such famous theatre people.
Why, it is true that we strut and fret our brief hour upon the stage, but thus far fame has eluded us.
Here's being modest, Skye. You should have seen the high esteem in which they were held by the people of Glasgow when I visited there to see their show.
The people of Glasgow were uncommonly kind. Certainly they treated us with more deference than we deserve.
I think not. I read of you in our newspaper. I have the article right here.
Skye reached under the bar, then pulled out a newspaper that was carefully folded to display the article that held her interest.
Campbell's Musical Saloon has occasioned many theatricals and musicales of note, but rarely have the boards been so crowned as to be trod by that magnificent pair of thespians, Andrew and Rosanna McAllister. Brother and sister they, the McAllisters, have long been the object of attention and admiration in New York. Should one be fortunate enough to attend a performance in which these two appear, they will indeed regard the evening of entertainment as time well spent. If the paper writes that of you, then you are truly famous.
You read very well, young lady. You would make a fine thespian yourself.
At that moment, Sheriff Angus Summerald came into the tavern.
Skye, lass, see if we can be of service to the sheriff.
Skye approached the sheriff, then curtsied.
Sheriff, may we serve you?
Sheriff Summerald looked over at Duff, then pointed at him.
Is it true that last week you fought with my sons for no reason?
That is not true.
How can you say it is not true when with my own eyes I saw the bruises you inflicted upon them?
I am not saying that I didn't fight with them. What I dispute is that I fought with them for no reason. I fought with them because they attacked me.
There are three of them, but only one of you. Yet they are the injured ones. Would you be telling me, Duff McAllister, that they attacked you first and you bested the three of them? Because that I am not believing.
Well, you should believe it, Sheriff, for Duff is speaking only the truth. All who were here that night will bear witness to the fact that your sons attacked McAllister.
Aye, Sheriff, 'tis true enough your sons started the fight.
The sheriff said nothing in direct reply, but a blood vessel in his temple began to throb, a visible display of his anger. He looked at Andrew and Rosanna.
Are you the theater people I've heard about?
I don't know if or what you might have heard of us, but it is true that we are theater people.
Why dishonor yourselves by standing with one who is known to be a brigand?
Duff McAllister is my cousin. Were he at the gates of hell, I would stand by him.
You may claim that he is your cousin?
Aye, of the selfsame blood as Falcon McAllister, he who defeated your ancestor at Glenfruin.
Ah, it is worthless you are, the lot of you.
And it's good riddance to you, Angus Summerald.
2 days later, Duff came to Glasgow to tell his cousins goodbye. He met him in Andrew's dressing room.
We have had a wonderful visit, especially so since we met you and were able to reconnect our family after all these years. And how wonderful it was to meet Skye. She is such a delightful young lady. I am sure the two of you will be very happy.
Thank you. I'm sure we will be as well. And I enjoyed meeting both of you. It was an interesting experience finding out what happened to those of my family who went to America.
You should come to America as well. Yes, come to America after you have married, and bring your bride with you.
Perhaps I will. I'd like to see America, and I'd like Skye to see it with me.
But if you come, you should come to live, not just to visit. You would love it in America, and Americans would welcome you. We are that kind of people.
I have land here. If I were to come to America, how would I live? I have no land there.
Land is easily acquired. We have so much land in America that we'd give it away. It's called homesteading. All you have to do is move on to a piece of unoccupied property, work it, and file a claim. Then it becomes yours.
Aye, that is an interesting proposition. But Skye still has her family here. I think it might be difficult to persuade her to undertake such an adventure.
Perhaps not as difficult as you may think. Skye strikes me as a young woman with an adventurous spirit. She may want to come, but whether you come to visit or to live, you must spend some time with us.
A large banner stretched across the top of the mirror behind the bar at the White Horse Pub. The banner was festooned with flowers, and it bore the words, "Congratulations to Captain Duff Tavish McAllister and Skye McGregor." Ever since Duff had arrived at the pub earlier this evening, customers had been coming up to him, congratulating him on the fact that tomorrow he and Skye were to be married.
"'Tis a surprise to me that after 20 days of posting bans, not one person came up to me with a reason why a scallywag such as yourself is not fit to marry with the lovely and sainted Skye McGregor. Tis teasing you, I am, Duff. We're sure and I can think of no better to be the groom to our fair Skye. But where is the lassie?"
Skye wasn't there. In fact, as of 1 week ago, she no longer officially worked in the pub. But because her father owned it and she had made many friends among his customers, she still came around.
"She's at home with her mother. Evidently, there was some last-minute emergency with the wedding dress. And if you do not realize it yet, Duff, my lad, you will soon enough. Women can find more last-minute emergencies than you can ever imagine. You'll just have to put up with it and continue to love them."
"That I can do."
"Tell me, have you heard anything from your cousin since they returned to America?"
"I got a nice letter from them a few days ago, wanting me to thank everyone for the hospitality they were shown while they were here."
"You got the letter a few days ago, and you're only now getting around to thanking us? Pray tell, lad, what has kept you so long?"
Ian was teasing Duff because for the last 3 days, Duff had been busy preparing for the wedding by renovating his house to make it more habitable for Skye.
"Well, it was easy to be hospitable to the likes of them. You must be proud of them, being as their kin and all."
"The truth to tell, Ian, is that we're not that much kin. I had never even heard of them until Andrew sent me the letter. But they're good people, and 'tis proud I am to claim kinship with them. I very much enjoyed the time I got to spend with them while they were here."
Ian glanced up at the clock, something he had done several times over the last few minutes.
"Are you that anxious to close for the night that you have to check the clock every few minutes?"
"You've noticed, have you?"
"You've looked at the clock so many times, 'tis a wonder you haven't looked the hands right off the face."
"'Tis wondering I am what might be keeping Skye."
"I thought you'd said she'd gone home because of some emergency."
"Aye, but she said she was coming back to help me close. 'Tis 10:30 already. I'll be closing at 11.
"Well, no doubt she and her mother found even more emergencies to work on."
"Knowing my wife and my daughter as I do, I'm sure you're right. And I think I'd rather her be at home than out all by herself in the dark of night."
"I'll tell you what, I'll walk the path from here to your house. If she's home, I'll tell her to stay there. If I see her, I'll walk with her back to the pub."
"Thank you, lad. 'Tis a good son-in-law you'll be making for thinking of my worry like that. I must confess, it'd be a comfort for me to see her come through that door new."
"I'll find her."
It was quite pleasant outside. The night air was soft and warm, but not overly so, and redolent with a faint smell of the sea, as well as the perfume of aromatic flora.
No! Please! Leave me be!
It was Skye's voice, and it came from across the road behind the shrubbery.
"Hold your hand over her mouth."
Duff dashed across the road, then through the line of shrubbery. Though it was dark, in the light of the full moon, he could see Skye struggling with Donald and Roderick Summer. The top of Skye's dress had been pulled down and both her breasts were exposed, the creamy white flesh gleaming in the moonlight. Donald was holding her, and Roderick, with a leering grin on his face, was unbuttoning his pants.
"Let her go!"
Startled by Duff's shout, Donald let Skye go. The two men turned toward Duff. Recognizing him, both smiled and pulled daggers from their belts.
"Well now, if it isn't Duff McAllister come like an avenging angel to rescue his woman."
"Aye, and himself without a barstool.
Or a knife, we'll be settling our scores permanent."
"Run to your father, Skye."
"Duff,
They both have knives.
I'll deal with them. You get yourself somewhere safe now.
Roderick made the first move, coming toward Duff with his hand extended and the knife held low. Duff leaped adroitly to one side. Then, with the side of his fist, he clubbed Roderick on the back of his head. Roderick fell, and Duff reached down to pick up his knife. Now, armed himself, he turned to face Donald. Donald made a swipe at him. Duff countered, driving the blade of Roderick's knife in between Donald's ribs.
You have killed me.
You left me no choice, Donald Summerald.
You have...
Donald Summerald was gone. Duff turned and raced back to the pub. He met Ian just coming out of the bar, holding a club, his face twisted in anger.
Sky said you were in trouble. I was coming to lend a hand.
Thank you. How is Sky?
Oh, she's inside. The lass is terrified. She said two of the Summerall brothers attacked her with knives. She'll be glad to see her well.
Ian went back inside with Duff. Duff saw Sky sitting at the far end of the bar with modesty restored, if not composure.
Are you all right, Sky?
Oh, I was so frightened for you.
Don't be frightened for me. 'Tis you I'm worried about. Are you all right?
They tried to... If you hadn't come along when you did, they might have been...
Wait a minute. What are you saying, girl? Did they hurt you? Because if they did, I...
Ian put the club down and pulled a pistol out from under the bar.
No, they did nothing. Duff came along in time.
It makes no difference whether they came along in time or not. I'll be squaring things with them.
There is no need for you to go. I've already killed Donald.
You killed him?
I had no choice. They both came toward me with knives. It was a case of kill or be killed.
Aye. Before I left, I saw they both had knives.
I'd better go to the sheriff to report it. Though I'm sure that Roderick has already made the report.
The sheriff is not going to take too kindly to you killing one of his own sons.
It was self-defense. The sheriff will have to know that.
Duff. Those boys have been naught but trouble their whole lives, and the sheriff well knows that. But has he ever lifted a hand to stop them? Nay, he has not. Why think you know that the sheriff will believe you?
I am an innocent man, Ian. I'll not be running like a common criminal when I know I've done nothing wrong. I'll be going to see the sheriff now.
I will come with you to tell the truth.
There's no need for you to come.
I'll not see my husband to be jailed for something he didna do.
You stay here.
Duff McAllister, you are not yet my husband, so you have no right to tell me I can't come with you.
Best get used to it, lad. She's a girl with her own mind.
All right. I'll not be fighting with you on the very night before we are to be wed.
'Tis a smart husband you will be. Let's be off then.
Duff and Sky were halfway to the office of the sheriff when they saw the sheriff and three of his deputies coming toward them. Rab Malcolm, who was Summerald's chief deputy, was one of the men with him.
Sheriff, I was coming to see you.
Shoot him!
No, Sheriff!
Sky jumped between Duff and the sheriff. Sky spun around toward Duff. He saw a growing spread of crimson on her chest. Duff managed to pull her off the road and through the shrubbery.
Sky! Sky!
Oh, my Duff! It would have been such a lovely wedding.
Nay! Nay!
He's down there!
Duff moved into the shrubbery and waited. A moment later, one of the sheriff's deputies came through the hedgerow. Duff stepped out of the shrubbery and landed a haymaker on the deputy's jaw. Duff took his gun from him and shot him from point-blank range.
Gillis! Gillis! Did you get him?
Duff stepped back through the hedgerow and out onto the road. He was holding Gillis's gun.
No, Summerald. I got Gillis.
Shoot him! Rob, Levin, shoot him!
Duff returned fire. Nevin went down. And when he did, the sheriff and Malcolm suddenly realized that in seconds, their number had been decreased by half. The two men turned and ran. For a moment, Duff considered running after them. He threw the gun away, then scooped Skye into his arms to take her back to her father. Ian was just closing up his pub when Duff pushed in through the front door of the White Horse.
Skye! Duff, what happened? My God, what happened?
It was the sheriff and his deputies.
Duff laid Skye on the bar, and Ian fell across her.
Nay! Nay!
I killed Gillis and Nevin. Sheriff Summerald and Deputy Malcolm ran away. I didn't go after them because I wanted to bring Skye home.
I thank you for that, lad.
I'm going after them, no.
Nay, don't. You'd best be getting away.
Where would I go? No matter where I go in Scotland, I'd be a wanted man. So I may as well get my revenge.
Nay, I've lost Skye. I'll not be one to lose you now, for it is my own son, Yar. For all that my Skye didn't live till tomorrow, when you would have waited. Go, please.
All right. I'll just stop by my place and gather a few things.
There is no time for that.
Opening his cash box, Ian took out 10 ten-pound notes and thrust them into Duff's hands.
Go!
I can't take your money.
Tis little enough, and I've got something else for you.
You've given me enough.
This be yours already. Tis something you left here so as to be wearing at your wedding.
Ian reached under the bar, opened a metal box, then handed an object to Duff. It was the Victoria Cross, showing a crowned lion above the crown of England and bearing the inscription for valor.
Keep this with you, lad, wherever you go. And remember always, God and the Queen.
Thank you, Ian. Please, have you a piece of paper and a pen?
Ian got a sheet of paper and a pen and handed the items to Duff. Duff began to write.
In exchange for £100 paid in full, I, Duff Tavish McAllister, with this instrument, do transfer ownership to Ian McGregor, the 300 acres of land known as Three Crowns, to include old buildings, improvements, appurtenances, livestock, and any and all things of value. Duff Tavish McAllister. I'm beholden to you, Ian.
Here, lad, you don't want to do that.
Ian, you and I both know I'll never return to Scotland. That means my land will be confiscated by the county. Don't you know I'd rather you have it?
Aye, lad, I see your point. But know this, if ever you should return, Three Crowns is all yours.
Duff shook Ian's hand, then he went over to Skye's body. Leaning over, he kissed her on her lips.
She will always be in my heart, Ian.
I know, lad. I know. No, please. Be gone with you before the sheriff comes back.
Duff nodded and started toward the door.
No, lad. They may be out there watching. The back door.
There were three ships on the Firth of Clyde. Two were steamships that lay anchored in the harbor. But one was tied up against the docks, and it was the Hiawatha, a three-masted, square-rigged sailing ship. There was a sailor standing watch on the dock side of the ship, which meant Duff was going to have to get on board without the man on watch seeing him. As he considered how best to accomplish this, he saw a skiff tied up about 100 yards down the dock. Looking around to make certain he wasn't being observed, Duff untied the skiff, then rowed it out a short way before turning back to approach the Hiawatha from the opposite side. There, he climbed up the side of the vessel and over the railing. Finding a dark, out-of-the-way place on deck, he settled down to wait. The ship was well underway when Duff awoke the next morning. lifting and falling, rolling from side to side as it plowed over the long rolling swells of the North Atlantic. When he looked out from under the tarp, he could see the sails of the Hiawatha shining brilliantly white in the bright sunlight, filled with a following breeze. The helmsman stood at the wheel, his legs slightly spread as he held the ship on its course. Working sailors were moving about the deck, tightening a line here, loosening one there, providing the exact tension on the rigging and angle on the sheets to maintain maximum speed. Because all were busy, no one noticed Duff when he crawled out of the lifeboat. Standing, he approached a sailor who was twisting a turnbuckle to increase the tension on a line.
Pardon? But where might I find the captain?
Lord of mercy, where did you come from? And who are you?
I am Captain Duff McAllister, and I wish to speak with the captain.
How'd you get aboard the Hiawatha, Captain?
Please, your captain?
You wait here.
Where else would I go?
Duff walked over to the rail and looked back. In the distance, he could barely make out the shoreline. A moment later, the sailor returned with another man whom Duff took to be one of the ship's officers.
Are you the captain of this vessel?
I am Mr. Norton, the bosun. Who are you?
My name is Duff McAllister.
Jig said you called yourself a captain.
Aye, in the Scottish Reserves, I am a captain. I'm sorry if the sailor misunderstood. I wonder if I might speak with the captain of this ship.
Now look here. How did you get on board this ship?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I had a great deal to drink last night. I remember leaving the pub. Then I remember nothing until I woke up on this ship this morning. Methinks some of my friends may have played a trick on me.
I think we had best see the captain. Come with me.
Aye, such was my request. I would like to purchase passage to New York.
Come with me.
Captain Powell glared down from the quarterdeck at Duff and his bosun.
Who have we here, Mr. Norton?
We found him aboard this morning, Captain.
What is your name, stowaway?
The name is McAllister, Captain, and 'twas not my intention to stow away.
It was not your intention to stow away. Then pray tell McAllister, how is it that you are on my ship?
I was drinking with my friends. I woke up on the ship this morning. They must have thought it good sport to put me here.
It matters not how you came aboard. The point is you are aboard, and that makes you a stowaway.
And they wish to be a stowaway. I have enough money to pay for my passage, and would be happy to do so.
That might be good if we are a passenger-carrying ship, but we are not. We are a merchant ship, and you are an unwanted cargo.
What shall I do with him, sir?
Confine him to the brig for the duration of the voyage. When we reach New York, we'll give him an opportunity to buy passage back to Scotland.
Captain, if you would permit a suggestion.
You may do so.
Peters did not return to the ship ere we weighed anchor. We are a one-man short in the starboard watch. Perhaps.
You would replace Peters with a stowaway?
Aye, sir, if you be willing.
Have you ever been to sea, McAllister?
I've been to sea, Captain, and fare well without becoming sick.
Could you do the work of an A.B.?
I've never worked as a sailor, but I learned quickly.
From your dress, you have the appearance of a man of means. Are you a wealthy man, McAllister?
I have land and livestock.
Would you feel the work of an able-bodied seaman beneath a man of your station?
Captain, as you have pointed out, and I readily admit, I am a stowaway on your ship. My alternative to working, it would appear, would be to spend the entire voyage in the brig. I would consider honest labor to be far superior to that condition.
Very well, McAllister. You may well work for your passage. Mr. Norton, assign him to the starboard watch. Did Peters leave his chest?
Aye, sir, he did.
McAllister, you're a bit taller than Peters, and a bit broader in the shoulders, I would say. But I think you could wear his clothes. I will advise you to do so, for your current attire is ill-suited for the task at hand.
Thank you, Captain.
Mr. Norton, take McAllister below and get him properly dressed, then muster the crew.
Aye, aye, Captain.
If Duff McAllister thought the life of a sailor at sea would be easy, he was quickly disabused of that notion after 1 week at sea. The ship's officers found much for him to do, and while Duff initially thought it might merely be a means of making work to keep the sailors busy, he soon realized that all the work was necessary. Whenever any of the standing rigging became slack, a condition that seemed to be constant. The coverings had to be removed, tackles tended to, and tension put on the rigging until it was drawn well taut. Afterward, the coverings had to be replaced, which Duff learned was no easy thing to do. Even the work caused work, because one rope could not be adjusted without requiring an adjustment to another. One could not stay a mast aft by the back stays without slacking up the head stays. In addition to the constant attention to the ship's rigging, there was greasing, oiling, varnishing, painting, scraping, and scrubbing to be attended to, plus furling, bracing, making and setting sail, pulling and climbing. Duff found that there was much to occupy him. As the voyage progressed, Duff discovered that the business of running the ship was much to be preferred over the long, silent hours of night watch. That was because it was during those hours of night watch when he most felt the pain of Skye's death. More than one time, he was sure that he heard her voice. Duff would turn with a smile on his face, but the smile would be replaced by an expression of sorrow as he realized that what he was hearing was the whisper of the wind. Toward the end of the second week at sea, the starboard watch was below when Duff heard the raindrops falling on the deck thick and fast.
All hands on deck! All hands on deck! Tops in me hearties! We're in the heavy seas!
The heavy head sea was beating against the Hiawatha. On one particularly large plunge, the bowsprit dipped and poked through a large swell. The wave broke over the bow and threw its spray the entire length of the deck. Suddenly, the great mainsail on the mainmast ripped open from top to bottom.
McAllister! Gig! Lay up to furl that sheet before it blows to tatters!
Aye! With me, McAllister!
The two men climbed the mast and began working on the torn sail. But no sooner had they finished with it than the topsail tore loose and began flapping in the breeze.
We best get to the topsail!
When they reached the topgallant, the wind was of near hurricane velocity.
We have to pull in the sail! Wrap your leg round topgallant yard so you can hang on!
Fighting hard to overcome the flapping pitch and yaw, the two men were able to pull in the loose sail, then furl it at the bottom, securing it with line.
We can go back down now!
At that very moment, a severe roll tossed Kelly free and he started to fall. Without thinking, Duff let go with his hands and holding himself secure only by his legs almost like a trapeze artist, he swung his torso down and managed to catch Jig by one hand. The next roll of the ship pitched Kelly into the mast and he grabbed it with both arms. Duff pulled himself back up, then grabbed the mast and scrambled back down to the deck just behind Kelly.
Well done, lad! Well done!